Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at RocketMortgage.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 335 for January 24th, 2018. Hamcation Preview.
Hello, everybody. It's K9EID, Bob Heil, and I'm here with our usual, well, not quite usual, because we have two down tonight. Amanda has been at the dentist all day, and I'm sure she isn't ready to come and talk to any of us. And you know where Gordo is. I think we have a really good picture of where Gordo is. Yes, look at that. Where is he? Let's see if we can find him out there. You know what? I think that is his van down in the corner. Anyway, that's where Gordo is at Quartz Fest, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about Quartz Fest next week when he gets back. But right now, he's out in the desert having probably too much fun, and we sure hope Amanda gets to feeling better. But look who's filling in. Valerie, thank you very much for taking the helm tonight. You're doing two duties tonight, right?
Yep, two hats tonight. Up here in Land of Wisconsin, or Illinois, I keep forgetting. It's actually pretty nice up here lately. So all the snow has melted, even though it's January, so things are good. Got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about Bouvet, some other DX coming up, a couple of contests, and we're going to talk about Kosovo. This card is useless, but we'll talk about that in my segment coming up at the end of the show. So back to you, Bob.
Okay, well, we'll see you a couple of times. George, how you doing? You got all your transmitters up and running this week, or what's new?
I do, Bob, and as a matter of fact, I was at one of the cow pastures today, because these things aren't located, you know, downtown. They're usually in isolated locations where they can put up a tall tower. Last week, we were talking about the weather and how cold it had been and the snow and, you know, different things we had here that are a little unusual. And I mentioned something about ice on FM broadcast antennas. And I got an email question from someone about that this past week. And I thought, you know, maybe that would make a good tale from the transmitter site. So we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight.
Okay, that'll be great. We'll look forward to that. But we want to get to our guest tonight right out of the chute, because it's very important. And we have Michael with us. Michael is the general chairman of the Orlando Hamcation. We're so glad that you could meet with us tonight, Michael. And we want to learn a little bit more about what's going on in Orlando. So let's hear a little bit of what you got cooking for us in a few weeks.
Everything's coming along great. As everybody much aware, Peter Myers retired as the chairman. So this is my first year filling the shoes of his, which are pretty big ones to fill. But look forward to seeing everybody down here in Orlando. It's been a little chilly. We've had some good cold fronts, but today we were 70 degrees, so which is much better than most of the nation.
A little bit of commercial for Orlando, huh? Well, there we got some slides here. We'll run through these a little bit. There's your paper that tells us that it's the 9th through the 18th, or the 11th, I'm all right, the 9th and the 18th of, the 11th of 2018. And it's in a really great place. That convention center is really good. So, Vic, go ahead and run through some of these pictures and let Michael tell us what we're watching. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, this is actually on the show on Friday, right after we open. So you can see we get a lot of visitors coming in on Friday. We have some of the major vendors like Batteries America there. This is one of the areas that we do forums in. This area holds about 60 to 65 people in it for forums. We have two different locations we do the forums in. And, of course, ICOM will be here, Kenwood, Yaesu, all of your major vendors. ICOM will be showing off their new 7610 radio this year.
All right. That's NV3E. He's a great viewer here in on Ham Nation. He's always in the chat room, and we like to put his picture up there. So I thought I'd stick a couple of the Ham Nation guys in here. That was at our booth. And there is a very good friend of mine. I've known him forever. W0WD. He's a great operator, and he's just a great friend. And he came down to Orlando.
This is outside in our RV tailgate area. We usually have about 40 to 50 RV tailgaters that come in. This is the line on Friday morning that's wrapping around the building. We have two entrances to enter the show.
Wow.
This is our swaps building, which is pretty much our inside tailgate area. There is over 200 swap tables in this building.
Mm. That's
this is outside in the tailgate area. We do have over 300 tailgate spaces that we sell every year. This is more of the RV tailgate area.
I'm always amazed at how many of the fellows come in and camp overnight, and they, of course, do a lot of swap and so on, but a lot of campers. I don't know that I've ever seen a Hamfest with that many, so you attract a lot of those. How many people were at Hamcation last year? You have a count on that, Michael?
Yes, it was a little over 19,000 visitors over the 3 days.
19,000. That's wonderful. Well, you definitely have taken over second place, that's for sure. And you're probably headed for first, right?
The guys from DARE, we work very closely with them. And sometimes it is a competition, but it's not. We're both here to help the ham community and do what we can to get everybody together at different shows. So each one of us have our own unique features.
Absolutely. Well, you guys have such a different type of ham fest because it's in the winter when it's very cold everywhere else. And a lot of guys go down to escape and have a little vacation and play ham radio. And that's really great. So I always appreciate what you guys are doing. And we'll be able to be there. And got a couple of brand new products. One of them is this new PR77 that I'm talking into. And we're going to show a new product we're working on, too, the parametric receive system. It's not quite ready, but I've been working on it a long time, so we'll be doing that. Now, you have a lot of forums, too. You showed the tent where you do the forums. How many forums have you got booked this year? You have a count on that?
Right now we're at 28 forums, and they're actually all on Saturday this year. We have none scheduled as of right now on Friday.
Mm. Well, you have a great place for it. I have to tell you that. It's really neat. Tell this story about that. It's not a tent. It's an emergency building. Is that correct?
Yes, we actually get them from the Florida State Emergency Response Team. They actually set them up as hospitals in the field, so you can actually take these and connect them together and it will make a full-fledged mobile hospital all the way to surgical areas that they can do if they need to during a disaster.
Well, I've always been impressed whenever we do the workshops in there. It's really a neat thing. So I congratulate you on that, because I know in some years past, it was just out in the open, and that was a little crazy when the wind came up. Well, is there anything else that we need to know that we've been maybe not talking about? Is there anything that you want to tell everybody?
A couple things. One thing is, as I said, ICOM will have their 7610 there. It is also our main prize on Sunday. We'll be giving one away to someone. And Saturday's prize will be a ICOM 7100. And the early bird prize that will go out will be an ICOM 4100. Also, Stepper IR has donated a SDA 2000 Optimizer IR. And Tar Heel Antenna WB0W, unfortunately, will not be here this year. But he will be back next year, and he has donated a choice of any Tar Heel antenna to the winner.
All right. And I can tell you that Heil Sound will have one of the Pro 7 headsets also, and we'll bring that along. So you have wonderful prizes. There's a lot more of them, too, I know. But I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on with us, because I wanted our audience to know a little more about Hamcation. Have they never been there? They can see some pictures, and hopefully they'll get in their car and head south around February 8th and be there for the ninth, because it's a great fest, and I congratulate all of you for making it happen. It's really, really fun. So thanks for doing that, and I appreciate you coming on the show tonight, Michael.
And thank you, Bob, for allowing me to come on, and it was a real pleasure. So hopefully we'll have to do this more often.
We can. You can keep us updated as to what's going on. You see how easy it is, and it was really, really good to see you. So tell all the crew hello, and we'll see you guys in a few weeks, and come down and have fun in Orlando.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
Yes. All right. Well, we want to move on down the line, and we're going to talk about ICOM, because they do have some great products and a couple of newbies. So let's take a look at what ICOM has for us tonight.
Happy New Year's from ICOM. Start the new year out with a bang with one of ICOM's new available products. Communications have never been so fun. The SDR you've asked for is here. ICOM's new 7610 is a high-performance RMDR with the ability to pick out the faintest signal, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF Direct Sampling System, 110 RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. ID31A Plus, a new D-Star communications device, is here. Easy to operate, the ID31A Plus is available in silver, red, or gold. Worldwide digital communications. Share pictures and text messages. IPX7 waterproof, compact, lightweight, and tough. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For January, it's the compact and submersible ICOM ID31A Plus 5-watt UHF digital portable transceiver, a built-in GPS, micro SD card slot, analog and digital operation, and it's got automatic D-Star repeater lift-up function for easy D-Star operation. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. Bob, I know you haven't been able to play with your pine board because you're not back at the ham shack right now, but you've got a little something for us on tonight, don't you?
Well, I might not be able to be on the air with it just last week or two, but I'll be there next week because we have the AM rally, which is coming up. I'll give you a little more information on it next week, but you really want to be on the air for that. It is so much fun. It's a whole weekend of AM, and we really enjoy having guys on with that. But I'm getting all of these reports. I cannot tell you how impressed I am at some of the work I'm seeing. I have a video that Victor should play. This came from a fellow that he did a little recording of his preamp. What he did is he plugged his, he built a radio, one of the regen radios, a crystal radio that you can only use headphones. And look what he did. This is pretty cool. I hope you can hear it.
Cobbled together a little crystal radio to test it out with. Got it hooked up to a couple of powered speakers there. Let it warm up here. Look at there. Crystal radio.
Yeah, it's hard to hear it there. It's a little bit low in volume, but that's another use for that preamp, and we're going to get into some of that in oncoming weeks. There's so many things we can do. That's why I did it modularly, so we can do other things with it. That preamplifier, actually, the basis of my design was the front end of a Fender amplifier for a guitar. Wasn't as exotic as that would be, but that's really a cool thing that we'll be able to do all kinds of different things with it. And I do have those plans. I also got several emails. I get a lot of emails with things that I want to straighten around with some of the guys. Bill, K4000, he asked about the wire from the transmitter over into the preamp. Anytime you have an audio wire, especially a microphone line, it must be shielded. That's very important. And if you can find it and it's around, I use a little very small, I don't have a piece of it here, but it's very small coax. It's actually 52 ohms, called RG174. And it's great for using it for microphone leads or anything in a small space because it's not very big. And you need to shield any kind of microphone or audio leads. And I hope that answers that for some of the guys. You can't just run a piece of wire from a jack over to the output of the tube. You can't do that. Well, you can, but you're going to end up with 60 cycle hum. The shield will be grounded, and inside that shield is the plus audio lead, and it kills all the hum and the static and noise that would pick up. And we also got some really good pictures. I got a couple of them. You know, one of the things we're talking about doing is building the transmitter and all the thing on pine or on off of pine board onto metal. Chip sent this to me. Chip is he's a stalwart in the chat room, and he also does a lot of the drawings. He and Gene put those together. But he had a great idea, and this is done years ago. I've seen this done. That is a pie pan turned upside down, so you don't have to buy a $20-$30 Bud aluminum box. You can do it on a pie pan. I mean, that great idea. Here is a fabulous idea, and it comes from W9DZ. You know, we've talked about the coil. You can get it from MFJ, and it works very well. However, you could do it with a toroidal coil, and this is what Alan did, and it works really well. Here's how the transmitter worked out with it. And this is a very cool way of building the final coil. And it's easily done. And what I'll do next week I'll bring with me the coil. We'll wind one of them. It's I think it's 42 turns on a T130. I forget what it is exactly. But we will give you all of the information as to how to do that. It's really easy to do these things. And it works great. It works as good as the big old coil. And for 80 meters, it's going to be 46 turns, and it's on a T130-2. That's the coil form. The toroid is 130-2. Take that, takes a number 20 wire, put 46 turns around it, you got yourself an 80-meter coil. Well, here's another one. This is very cool. This comes from KK4RF, and boy, have I been hearing a lot about him, because there's all kinds of people working this transmitter that he's built, and he has put that same coil underneath the chassis. He's built it on metal, on aluminum. Isn't that cool? What a nice job, and I really appreciate you sending these pictures, and we'll have to start looking for you on the air, because there's just so many guys. I think I mentioned it last week. He was one of the guys that the fellow had written in, worked 8 different pine boards, guys, on a Saturday afternoon on 75 meters, 3885. So you see, there's a lot of stuff going on, and a lot of people enjoying all of this. And I'm so thrilled, because it's getting people to build. And that's what it's all about, is getting out that soldering iron and making it happen. And the good part of it is, I can tell you firsthand, from the day I got my license back in 1956, you build something, that's one thing. But when you put it on the air and you make a contact with it, there is nothing. There is no feeling like that. Yeah, you're going to get a lot of happies out of turning on your 7610 or your FT of 5000 or your K3 or your Flex, but it's not the same feeling at all as if you built it and you put it all together. And when you got it all finished and all of this, what you might look at, say, in our gobbledygook stuff, it works, it sounds great, and then you get all these kudos about how good it sounds, and you built it. There's the key. And so we're hoping that more and more of you will come aboard. One of the things I did this past week, and I will do it again Saturday, we've got the Winterfest here in St. Louis comes up Saturday, and I will be at the Winterfest for a while. I'm going to take the pine board with me, because a lot of guys, it's the first thing they ask anymore. It used to be, hey, did you bring some microphone? Now they say, hey, where's the pine board? So we'll put it on display. Maybe we'll hook it up and talk across the room or whatever on a light bulb. Anyway, the guys, last Saturday I visited their club meeting, and I'm going to do it again this Saturday. We're going to have some video of it, hopefully next week. It's 4 or 5 guys in a club, and they have started building the pine board. That is their project. We've got 3 or 4 down in South Carolina. I heard of one in Virginia. There's guys coming around the country now. Clubs have some kind of activity rather than going there drinking a Dr. Pepper or having a spot of tea or whatever, and arguing about how much money you don't have or do have in the treasure. These guys are having fun building transmitter on pine board. And the one I visited last Saturday was in Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska. And we're going to have them on here in the next week or two. We're getting some video together and so on, because I think it's a fabulous project for any club. So if you have a club and it's kind of like boring and a lot of guys don't go to the meeting, we got something else, solve that. And we're doing a lot of club meetings again. So if you have a club, send me an email. We'll get up on Skype and we'll do things. And it's really fun to visit the clubs. But I'm so excited. I'm excited for all of you because it gives you a whole different aspect of what's going on in amateur radio. And that's what it's for me, because ham radio is, it's just been my lifeblood. It's where I learned to do all of these things. And I'm really thrilled that I can pass some of this on to you, and you can have a lot of fun too. Well, thanks a lot for the time and watching, and send me emails and give me your club Skype address, and let's get to making things. But we're going to go have a little more fun tonight, because we're going to go down south and we're going to talk to the fun master of Ham Nation, Don Williams. How you doing, Don?
I've been called a lot of things, some of them good, a lot of them bad, but Fun Master, I'm not sure if I've ever heard that. But, you know, I am wearing the Mardi Gras colors tonight, and Mardi Gras is February 13th, so it's rapidly coming up. Hey, you know, last week I mentioned that it was Tyler's birthday over the weekend, and I also mentioned, you know, if you wanted to send him a birthday QSL card, well, somebody did. David, KB9EWG in La Crosse, Wisconsin, sent Tyler a happy birthday QSL card. And that is just the coolest thing. So thank you, David. I believe David and Tyler are now Facebook friends as well because of this. So very good. Thanks, David. Appreciate that. That was a nice surprise, and brought a smile to the boy's face. So very good. Before we get into the news of the week with Newsline, I want to talk to you about Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage is a fine sponsor of this show, the Ham Nation Tonight, brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience, frankly, was not keeping up with the times. It was dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution. And that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's very convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's amazingly powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage will help you perform thousands of calculations. It'll do it for you in seconds. And based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for you for which you qualify and find the one that is just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. That's rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, we thank you for your support of Ham Nation. Now, let's get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline, shall we? From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2099, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, January 24th, 2018. A surprise leadership change at the ARRL. Here's Newsline's Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
We begin this week with breaking news. As Amateur Radio Newsline went to production and on the eve of the ARRL Board of Directors meeting, Tom Gallagher, NY2RF, the league's CEO, announced his retirement effective March 2nd. He told the ARRL that the new federal tax law's impact makes him reluctant to continue working in the state of Connecticut, where the league is headquartered. Tom is credited with, among other things, assisting the league in achieving a turnaround in its finances. A former financial services exec and investment banker, he has been a licensed ham since 1966. We will be following the league's search for his replacement.
Last year's AM rally was so much fun that the organizers have decided to bring it back. And for those building your own pine board project, it's the perfect excuse to finish it and get it on the air.
On the weekend of February 2nd through 4th, the rally will mix operating nostalgia for old-timers and give newer hams a chance at adventure in a completely different mode. AM, often considered the original amateur radio voice mode, is friendly to all radios from military and boat anchors to homebrew and broadcast, including the newest SDR models as well as vintage radios with tubes. If your radio can run full carrier amplitude modulation, you can be in it to win it. Activity will be on the HF bands except for 60 meters. Rally spokesman Clark Burgard, N1BCG, one of the organizers, said that the goal is simple. to demonstrate that AM is alive and well, and that, yes, it still works. There'll be plenty of opportunities for certificates of recognition, with categories such as most states contacted to most total contacts, all in five different classes of power output. If you hear the call, CQ AM Rally, go for it. For more details and to download a simple logging program for the event, visit the website at amrally.com. Logs are due no later than the 14th of February. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
January is coming to a close, and February, along with Valentine's Day, is coming up fast. With that in mind, here's a twist on Boy Meets Girl. It's Ham Meets Ham.
Let's face it, OMs are almost always out there in search of a good YL. And it seems a lot of YLs often can't resist a good OM. If you're thinking that this is a prelude to Hearts and Flowers, however, think again. We're talking about the YL-OM contest. So the real nitty-gritty here is all about signal reports and points. Between the 9th and 11th of February, a benevolent battle of the sexes known as the YL-OM contest will enliven SSB, CW, and digital modes. It's being run by the YLRL, the Young Ladies Radio League, and its popularity has been proven through the years. It's a pursuit that is as old as Adam and Eve, perhaps. Well, except neither one of them had radios. In this contest, YLs count OMs, and OMs count YLs, and everyone counts. For more details, visit YLRL.org. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jerry Goodrich, KF5KRN.
As you can see from that last picture, Skeeter Nash and Jerry Goodrich are husband and wife. And for the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, Jerry Goodrich, KF5KRN, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We're coming down from a solar storm fizzle that didn't do much but ruffle Earth's feathers just a little bit. And region 2696 fires off a parting shot before it rotates behind the sun's west limb as if to get solar flux just that last little boost. Those stories and more in the news this week. The space weather this week is really putting the brakes on. We're coming down from a solar storm fizzle from some fast wind from this coronal hole, this big, long, diagonal coronal hole that just never really hit us kind of at the right angle. The fast wind kind of eased on and then eased off. And that's been over the past few days. We've had nothing but basically unsettled conditions. The good news is that the amateur radio band stayed pretty good most of the time. We only had aurora at high latitude, so there weren't a lot of GPS disruptions either. But now that is beginning to wane. And meanwhile, we have region 2696. That region actually fired off a solar flare and a non-Earth-directed solar storm right before it disappeared around the west limb. But what that means now is we have a spotless sun again. So the solar flux is beginning to drop. We're sitting right at the bottom of marginal conditions for amateur radio propagation. And this is going to continue to be the story easily for the next 2 weeks. Switching to our solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are beginning to come down from that fast wind that's been hitting us over the past few days. And we're actually seeing something in the solar wind that might actually be part of a stealthy solar storm that we're clipping the edge of. So we might actually have a bit of active conditions before we completely calm down over the next day. Now, at high latitudes, NOAA is expecting unsettled conditions with about a 20% chance of a minor storm for the next few days before we calm down. At mid-latitudes, we're really expecting normal to unsettled conditions with only a 10% chance of active conditions. But like I said, we're seeing something right now in the solar wind that looks like it might actually be part of a stealthy solar storm or something like that. So it wouldn't surprise me one bit if we actually reached active conditions, maybe even down at mid-latitudes for a short while before we're completely out of this, which should be in the next day or two. Switching to our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, this is where it begins to get a little bleak, especially for you amateur radio operators. Now, we have absolutely no risk for solar flares right now. We have a spotless sun, so we don't have any radio blackouts to worry about, which makes both amateur radio operators and emergency responders and GPS users very, very happy. But where things kind of start looking bad is when we take a look at the solar flux. We do have the marginal conditions right now, but as you can see, it's going to tank into poor conditions here within the next couple days. And as it does that, we've actually looked at the backside of the sun for their stereo observations, and we don't see any active regions on the backside of the sun either. So unfortunately, this may mean we are going to stay at poor conditions for amateur radio propagation for easily the next 2 weeks, maybe even longer. So the space weather this week is really beginning to quiet down. We are coming down from a solar storm that's pretty much of a fizzle, but you aurora photographers, you might get one extra bump in activity from whatever this disturbance is that we're beginning to see in the solar wind right now. It might be a stealthy solar storm that we're clipping the edge of. It's kind of hard to tell. So we might actually bump back up to active conditions maybe over the next 24 hours or so, especially at high latitudes. But that will begin to wane here in the next few days, and things will begin to quiet down easily for a week after that. Now, you amateur radio operators, you don't probably get much of a bump in activity. Things are beginning to wane for you right now. We are beginning to dip close to the poor conditions, and it probably will move into poor conditions for radio propagation here in the next few days. And what's unfortunate is that it looks like it's going to remain that way easily for 2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks. So let's hope that the sun pops out some new active regions that can play some peekaboo for us and brighten up the sun a little bit. Otherwise, we're going to be dealing with these conditions for quite some time. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Awesome stuff, Dr. T. Thank you very much. And that is fresh information. If you don't follow her on Twitter, you really should. At Tamitha Scove. She tweets all the time, and you can get literally up to the second information. And in fact, she sent me a direct message on Twitter earlier tonight. She said, there's some interesting space weather activity that's hit unexpectedly. It started coming on while I was shooting this forecast, so I put it in. So this forecast is as fresh as it gets. And the only way to get it fresher is to follow her on Twitter. So by all means, do that. We're so fortunate to have her. There's the Twitter page right there. We're so fortunate to have her on our team here at Ham Nation. And she's a huge friend of Ham Radio and talks us up all the time. In fact, she was on a podcast earlier today called Weather. Oh, I can't think of what the name of it is. I'd have to pull this back up. What was it she said? I will, it's on my Facebook page, Weather something or other here. Let me find it here because we're running a little bit ahead. She was on, I can't find it now. Oh, Weather Brains, a podcast called Weather Brains. And she was talking Ham Radio and Ham Nation a lot on there. So she's a big cheerleader for what we do here, and we're just huge cheerleaders for what she does over there. So it's a great partnership. Another great partnership that we have is George and Smoke and Solder. What's going on over there, George?
Well, hello, Don. When I first saw you there in your wardrobe, I thought of the King Cake Baby.
Yeah. On my work computer at work, I have a model of a Trans Am, and it's covered in King Cake Babies. Let me see if I could find it here on my phone. I would show you, but I don't know if I can find it this fast. But nonetheless, yeah, I have a 1/18th scale model of a Trans Am, and it is completely and totally covered. I must have about 7 or 8 King Cake Babies hanging off of it. So, yeah, we're getting into the mood of it. We're getting into the mood of the Mom Pop Halls. That's pretty good stuff. But, of course, the best King Cakes are from the Randazzo family down here. And you can just search Randazzo King Cake, and you'll find there's several members of the Randazzo family, and they're not a sponsor of Ham Nation, but they make a damn good King Cake. And if you wanted to get one, they ship anywhere. I highly recommend the Randazzos, Manny Randazzo or Nana, N-O-N-N-A, Nana Randazzo. So if you want to check those out, by all means, Google them and you'll find Nothing better than a good fresh king cake. And this is the only time of the year you're going to be able to get it.
That is true. That is true. We're seeing them all over the place, you know, even this far north, which is not that far.
I had one today. In fact, someone brought one to work today. It was different. It was almost a brioche type of a cake, and it had fig filling in it, which was, I'd never had fig filling. Now, they fill them with strawberry and they fill them with cherry, and the traditional is with cinnamon in it. Cream cheese is very popular as well, but I'd never had one with fig filling, and it was amazing.
I have only ever had them with cinnamon. I didn't know that there were other varieties.
Yes.
I'll have to be on the lookout for that. Well, my wardrobe here, you know, I put it on today, and I was thinking, well, I look like a Russian sailor, but my wife saw it and says, no, you look like a inmate from the state penitentiary. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether I should be wearing this and, you know, walking around out in the woods at a transmitter site. You know, it might draw a little attention there. Anyway, tonight we've got a Tales from the Transmitter Site. You know, we were talking last week, Don, about icing and snow that, you know, we had experienced here. And I mentioned, you know, that's something broadcast engineers keep an eye on because, you know, it can cause us some big headaches. Amateurs, probably some people may have noticed a little reflective power creep up on their antennas when there is some icing situations. Other antennas won't be affected by it much. But when your transmitter is running, you know, 20 or 30 kW or so, ice can be a big problem. And the same way that amateur transmitters, all the newer ones, have VSWR power foldback built into them. If it senses a high reflected power, it will turn down the forward power. Most modern broadcast transmitters have that too, but doesn't always work like it should, so you're always a bit nervous when you've got an ice storm coming. Well, you know, we had snow here recently, and I'm happy to report I could not see any change in reflected power at any of my transmitter sites, which is a good thing. If it had been ice, though, it's a different story. And I've got a few pictures here of some various FM antennas I thought we'd take a look at. And talk a little bit about how you would combat something like ice with them. The first one here, this is a Bext brand antenna. Now, this is the ones I'm using on my low-power FM translators. There are 250 watts effective radiated power on those, so not a lot of power. And you can see on the rear there, right next to the tower, those are being fed by LMR400 jumpers or something similar size cable. So not a lot of power going into those. Those are pretty lightweight antennas, although they work pretty well. And they're broadband, which is kind of amazing. You know, I've got those up there, and I can cover the whole FM band without really needing to tune the antennas. Which is a good thing. Most of the time, you can't do that. Here is another typical antenna here. This is a Jampro, and you'll notice the style of it, very similar to the first one we looked at. The Jampro is a little bit heavier duty, though, and they can take more power. You know, they make antennas probably, and I haven't looked at the specs before tonight, but, you know, probably 50 or 60 kW input power to them. Of course, we're limited to 100 watts effective radiated power as the highest power in the United States, although there were a few stations that were grandfathered with more power than that. That pole that it's mounted on top of a tower there, you notice off to the right-hand side, those little wings there. That apparently is part of an old an old television transmitter site. That's an old TV antenna there, and they've taken off half of it. Normally, it would have those wings coming out both sides of it. That's referred to as a bat wing antenna. There are several other names for it as well. They were real popular on VHF in the analog days. And you still see a lot of them in the air because it's most of the time it's cheaper to leave it up there than it is to take it down. But anyway, they took them off of this particular antenna structure here, and I guess because they weren't using it anymore. That's a JamPro antenna, as I mentioned. You can see that's probably 7/8 inch line going into the bottom of that. So not a super lot of power. I'm just going to take a stab. Maybe it's 6 kW or so. I really don't know. I just grabbed this picture off the internet. Another antenna, and by the way, I have one of these at one of my stations. We're using a 5-bay antenna, just like that one. A little bit more power, though. This is my favorite FM antenna right here. This is an ERI antenna made by Electronic Research. And it's a bigger gauge of copper that it's built out of. You can see there that looks a little heavier duty than that JamPro was, and it certainly is. And a little bit different design there, too. This one is just another picture I found on the internet. Now, I have two stations that use these, and they're my 100 kW stations. There's something strange going on with this one, though. If you look on the right-hand side, though, you see that transmission line and the way that it's kind of broken up there, and there's elbows going into the side that goes on up the tower. I don't know what that's about. There's something unusual at this particular installation. It looks to me like maybe the top set of antenna bays there are coupled in differently than the lower set. Normally, it's just the inner bay lines run between all the bays, and the antenna is fed either from the bottom or around the center. But I don't know what's going on with that one. But this is one of my favorite antennas, like I say. Heavier duty. Now, in normal operation, you keep these things, the transmission lines dry, the inside of the antennas dry. You don't have a problem. They hang in there pretty good. However, if you get some ice, that's another story altogether. Ice will collect on these pretty good because it is a little colder up there, you know, at 1,000 feet or so than it is down here on the ground. And so it may not be freezing on the ground, but yet it's freezing up there. And if that ice builds up on the antennas, you're going to have something to contend with there if you're running, you know, 20 or 30 kilowatts up to it. It's not a... certainly not a desirable situation, but one that we face. Now, on this JamPro antenna that we looked at just a moment ago, if these get ice on them, you can see that little bar that kind of runs between the two Vs there that kind of couples it together. You can get ice across there. And, you know, just ice built up on the antenna itself changes the physical size of the antenna. These will start reflecting power back pretty bad. You will notice definitely if it starts getting ice on it. I have had another station that had one of these on it before. And, yeah, we had to turn the power back from about, 40 kilowatts input to the antenna down to less than 10 just to, keep from tripping the VSWR overload on it. Now, in this particular antenna, the way that they'll combat it, typically, and not as much down south here, although the one I'm talking about did have it, is they will put heating elements inside those arms on that antenna. And when you know you're going to have an icing situation, you'll turn on the power, and it will attempt to keep those arms warm enough that ice won't stick to them. You can have bad enough ice storm, though, that that's not completely successful, although it certainly helps out. Now, there's another way that we can prevent high reflective power and an ice storm, and that's with a radome. Some manufacturers will build a radome, polycarbonate, some fiberglass, different materials that are not RF sensitive, so the antenna does not see it there. But this can keep ice from building up on the elements of the antenna and help you keep the power down when you've got ice. Now, you see this a lot more up north than you do down south here, but we still have some people that have them, particularly on real tall antennas. This is another antenna right here. That has radomes on it. You see those elements look a little fat there? That's because they are covered with radomes to help keep the ice off of it. The antenna there on the top, that is a television antenna. And you can see the little climbing spikes out the side where somebody would go up it. Actually, what you're looking at right there is the radome covering that TV antenna to keep the ice off of it. The antenna is inside of there, and that's how this particular antenna is protected. You'll see antennas like this. I've seen them a lot on high-band VHF stations. A lot of UHF antennas look like this, too. They've got to keep the antenna itself covered in that case to keep from having a problem with the ice. Of course, that bat wing we looked at earlier, you know, I don't think there was any way around that. If you got ice, you're just going to have ice and see ghosting and various other anomalies on the air besides having to turn the power down. Now, the ERI antenna, one reason I really like this antenna is because it is heavier duty, and I've had ice fall on that Jampro antenna that we looked at earlier, the one with lighter weight elements, and actually destroy and bend up the elements on it. Ice from above fell on it from another part of the tower, from a television antenna that was located above it. These ERIs, they'll take a little more pounding there without getting bent. Of course, a heavy enough chunk of ice could still destroy it, so you might put an ice bridge above it. I've done that before. But they combat it in a different way. They don't put heating elements inside the antenna elements there, and they don't put radomes over them, typically. What the idea on this antenna is, it's tuned just a little bit off frequency. So when ice starts to build up on it, the antenna actually comes better into tune and will allow it to build up and actually go through the other side of resonance so that it gives it a broader range that it can take ice without seeing major reflected power on the ground. And I've actually seen, the SWR reading drop as one of these got ice on it before. Now, it's not foolproof. You could still get enough ice that you would see some issues. But in most cases around here, I've never seen these, have any kind of issue with it. By tuning the antenna slightly off frequency in the ice, bringing it in resonance, and then allows it to go a little off the other side, That is a pretty clever idea and takes care of the problem. So that's a little tales from the transmitter site. Ice is something we're definitely concerned about and keep an eye on when it's approaching your area with winter conditions. The engineer has got an eye on that. And if you notice, maybe your FM stations, your TV stations don't come in quite as well. When you've had an ice storm, well, the power has probably been turned down so that they can stay on the air at all. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it, and I hope we don't have any more ice this year. Maybe we're out of that, although it's getting chilly again. We've still got the rest of January and February to go through, so we'll just keep our fingers crossed on that. Now, I will not be here next week. I will be out. I should return the following week, and I've got something I'm going to give away, but we'll talk about it now. It's the Heil Ham Radio Handbook. It's Bob's latest edition of his famed Ham Radio Handbook. I don't know the date that that this one was put back together, but it was recently. It's got a lot of good information on it. Basic electronic technical stuff. There's resistors, active filter networks, antenna systems, VHF, UHF, tower ideas, you know, how to hang antennas from your towers. Anything you could think of, propagation, just, well, stations. As a matter of fact, that is a picture of Bob's station right there. A lot of good information on here, microphones, some transistor and op-amp circuits in there. A very good ham radio source, a lot of tables in here too. Just useful information for an amateur radio operator. Well, you can find these, I'm sure, wherever how microphones, headphones and such are sold. Most dealers will have these. Or you can get them at HeilSound.com, but I'm going to give you a chance to win one. If you would like to win Bob's Ham Radio Handbook here, well, I'm going to ask you a question that came out of Gordo's General Class Study Guide. And this is one that Gordo flagged for me, said, let's ask our viewers this question right here. Which of the following can perform automatic notching of interfering carriers? Is it bandpass tuning? Is it digital signal processing, DSP filters, balanced mixing, or will a noise limiter eliminate that interfering signal? Will that notch it out? One of those will notch out an interfering signal on your ham radio, and only one of those that we mentioned right there out of your four choices. Now, you know, there's other filters that can do it, analog filters and such, but they're not one of your options here. So it's bandpass tuning, DSP filter, balanced mixing, or a noise limiter. If you think you know the answer, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And week after next, we will be announcing a winner. I'll go through and see who won it, and we'll randomly choose one of it. So, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. If you want a chance to win the Heil Ham Radio Handbook, and who knows, maybe we'll draw your name in 2 weeks. Well, I guess it's time to bring Val in here for the rest of the show. I think you've got us covered with some good DX info as well as some chat room, don't you, Val?
Yep. I only got about an hour worth of stuff here. Just kidding. Hey, Kosovo, I don't know if you guys heard. This is an old card I saved in case they made Kosovo a DXCC entity. Which they did, but they didn't make it retroactive. So you can, Victor, why don't you go ahead and show, start the show. So this week in DX, obviously Kosovo, the next slide is Kosovo. It's the ARRL made it a DXCC entity. You're going to see it's the prefix is Z6, and now that brings a new total to 340. And they're not making it retroactive. They just approved it this week. So I did notice Z60 Alpha a very active station. They were on 7.1. Gosh, they're on 40 meters right now. You can show the next one. Bouvet, the guys are on their way. They're actually halfway today, which is a little bit ahead of schedule. So they should be arriving Tuesday, January 30th. So it'll take them a few days to get on the island, get all everything unloaded and set up. And so start looking for them probably towards the middle to end of next week sometime, weather permitting. If you want to show the next one. Now that's Bouvet. I just want to kind of give you a little idea. It's a 19 square mile island, and all the temperatures surrounding that island, even in summer, are near freezing. And that Bouvet, on average, gets two storms a week where the winds are over 70 miles an hour, and they're just going to be intense. So that's going to be a lot of fun if you want to go to the next one. That's the boat they're taking, and that's the Betanzo. It's a 236-foot vessel, 1,438 tons. And you can show the next one. And there's the fuel tankers lined up to put fuel into the Betanzo. It burns 6,000 liters of fuel a day, or that's about 1,585 gallons a day, or 153,000 gallons of fuel for the trip, worth $383,000 of fuel. That's just crazy. Go to the next one. That's just a shot of the boat. You can see it's fairly large. Go on to the next one. There's a shot from the bridge. And that is there is 2,782 55-gallon drums of fuel. That's going to fuel the two helicopters along with the generators for the crew when they're on the island. Those are the helicopters. They have the two twin MBB BO-105 twin turbine helicopters, and that's what they're going to use to sling 20,000 pounds worth of equipment onto the glacier. They're going to be camping on a glacier. So that's pretty amazing. There's where their sleeping quarters are, or their bags lined up before they go into the sleeping quarters. Next one, I think, is the sleeping quarters themselves. So four-door room, cute little portals, very small. There's their bathroom. That's actually pretty nice for a ship bathroom, I'm guessing. You know, I would have expected a little more primitive, so that's pretty good. Next one is the kitchen. They have to eat in shifts because you can only fit about 10 people at the table there. Next one is sort of a meeting room that they have in there. And then they have a really nice lounge area where you can watch DVDs or CD. I'm not sure what they have in there, if it's VHS or DVDs, but there they can watch movies. And then there, that's the, I don't know if any of you guys have been working these guys. They've been out on Maritime Mobile. That's the antenna, and there's the equipment. And a lot of people have been asking why they haven't been doing sideband. Well, Hal did get on at 40 meters and called for 20 minutes on sideband. No one heard him. And that's because they only have 100 watts, and obviously they're in the middle of nowhere. So, no deer, Echo Yankee 8 Mike, that was his birthday yesterday, so the cook made him a birthday cake, and there he is celebrating birthday. And I do want to send thanks out to Tim, Terry, Paul, and Mel over at DX Engineering. They're wonderful people. They donated a lot of equipment for this de-expedition, along with Flex Radio donated all the radios. ACOM donated the amps and stuff like that. It wouldn't have made this de-expedition possible. Next one is, I think, the Delta 68 Italy. Next slide. Oh, I got a video. There we go. I got a video of these guys. The wind was blowing so hard that they needed tugboats to push them away from the dock. And this is them casting off from Punta Arenas, Chile, last Thursday morning. It's I mean, you can put the sound on, but it's pretty, a lot of wind noise. So, but you can see it's a pretty massive vessel. There's a helipad landing on there. They got a crane on there to move the helicopters over to the helipad landing. And, you know, it's just amazing how big this ship is. And they were delayed in leaving. They were delayed. They were supposed to leave the Thursday prior. So they were delayed about a week getting some inspections completed and paperwork and finalized. And they had to do a lot of training, CPR, fire safety, boater safety training. So they were down there longer than expected, but they're on their way. And they made up time at sea, it looks like. So that's a pretty good thing. But Punta Arenas is considered one of the top five windiest cities in the world. It's very windy down there. Not a lot of sightseeing, touristy things to do in Punta Arenas. So it's mostly vessels and fishing, maybe. There's really nothing to do down there. And Punta Arenas is kind of buried if you look in on the map. There's a lot of sounds and land all around it. You're kind of, even though it looks like you can see sea as far as you can see there, but you're actually still surrounded by a lot of islands and land. And they've got a couple of zodiacs, but you cannot really make a zodiac landing on Bouvet. It's just too rocky, and that's why they needed the helicopter. And there's a helipad landing right there on the back end of the deck. Also coming up is Comoros. That's pretty rare, not as rare as Bouvet, which is number two. This is number 88 on the most wanted list. Comoros, they're going to be there 128 through February 10th. Those three guys are going there if you want to show the next one too. It's right there off the coast of Africa near Madagascar. And I believe that's it for my slides. No, there's more of Comoros. Oh, yeah, and then one more after this. See if you can guess what that is. Comoros is pretty well known for its vanilla. I didn't know that, but they make a lot of vanilla, which I use a lot when I bake. So that's pretty cool that they make so much vanilla there. So that's it for this week's DX Report. There are some contests coming up this weekend. We got the 160 CW CQ contest. Winter Field Day is this weekend as well. And you know what? It's pretty mild weather. Might be worth it to dust off your Field Day supplies and get out there. Also, next weekend is the WIL OM contest, which Don and Newsline told you about. And Vermont CUSA Party and Minnesota CUSA Party is next weekend as well. And the 1010 contest is next weekend. So a lot of contests coming up. A lot of cool stuff. And that's all I've got for DX and contesting. I just want to give a big congratulations to Kilo November 4 Golf Uniform Sierra Ken. He just got his tech in October, and 2 weeks ago he upgraded to General. So, yay, keep it going. He's on the fast track, evidently. Also did want to give a mention that every Thursday night on Echolink, there's a YL net, and there's YLs that check in from all over the world. And just go to Echolink and go into ALARA, A-L-A-R-A, Alpha Lima Alpha Radio Alpha. And that's 8 p.m. Eastern or 0100 UTC. So every Thursday night, YLNet. And you guys can, I guess you can just eavesdrop on that one, YLNet. Got a couple of questions for you guys. Let's start with Bob. First off, Kilo Echo Zero Alpha Yankee Japan. Andy, we all know he was with me in Puerto Rico, and he also went to Harvey. And I'm not sure if everybody knows this, but when we went to Puerto Rico, he was assigned to the dam. So we call him the dam ham. Well, while he was at the dam, he met the dam engineer. So the dam ham and the dam engineer, they fell in love and they just got married.
Wow.
Congratulations, Andy and Carmen. Now, Andy's going to be moving down to Puerto Rico. And he has a question because on his new property down there where they're living in Puerto Rico, there's a high concentration of limestone. He's only got 3 inches of good soil. So, Bob, What can he do for grounding or radials with this limestone situation?
Get out the diamond bits. That's what I had to do in Pleasant Hope.
Maybe he'll find oil while he's at it. Drill?
Yep. Okay. One of the things that it depends on if he's looking for the antenna, ground radials or something. You can lay them out on the ground, and that they'll go away. Really, they'll get grown over with the grass and stuff. But as far as the station ground, that's kind of tough. But you'd be surprised what you can do with some of these drills today. And that's what he's going to have to do, is get into it and find a good ground. Just
get the rods down there.
Just one.
All right, George. A lot of these commercial towers, do they use any kind of powder coating or anything to help protect against corrosion on these towers? That was from Jerry, Whiskey 8, Romeo, Quebec, Mike.
Most of these are galvanized towers. I don't know of any that really aren't. And, you know, you'll see a lot of them these days, strobe lit towers don't have to be painted. Anything under 200 feet, you know, you don't have the same requirements unless it's near an airport that you have to do lighting and such on it, or that you have to paint it. It's when you get taller than that these days that you still got to do one or the other. You can either paint it the aviation orange and white stripes alternating and use red lights at night, or you can strobe light it, and you don't have to paint the tower at all. But yeah, galvanized and a pretty good thick heavy coat of galvanizing too. And when you get a nick or something on one of them, they're made out of iron, so they could rust. So they use a cold galvanizing spray. They'll clean up the spot, and then they'll coat it with that to reapply galvanizing to it. I don't know, you know, because I don't climb up there and look at these myself, particularly not anymore. But I'm sure if Jerry was here, he could tell us all about it.
Yeah, we have on our commercial tower, we got the two static lights and two flashing lights, and we still have it painted. It's alternating white and red and white and red. Yeah, I'm not sure what that tower is made of. I've never really gone up that one. Speaking of which, George, while I got you, this is a question from me. What's the highest you've ever climbed? Have you climbed some of these?
The highest I've ever climbed is 400 feet.
Ooh,
I've ridden an elevator higher than that. I don't remember.
That doesn't count.
Yeah. Well, it ought to, because...
was it an outside elevator?
No, it's inside elevator. But they don't go all the way to the top. You know, they stop about the last 100 foot. You got to get out and climb. But no, I am not a tower climber.
Well, I'm going to ask the same thing for Don. Have you climbed, or what's the highest you've ever climbed?
Do I look like a tower monkey?
I don't know. Maybe
no,
you're both.
I don't know. I fell off the bottom step of our back deck in the rain one night and broke my shoulder. So there is no way in hell I'm going up a tower. No. I've got 50 feet of Roan 25 that's laying on its side in my garage in sections. And until I can get somebody to come over here and put that thing up, that's where it's staying, because my big behind ain't going up nowhere, no how. Thank you, ma'am.
Now, I have a generator question. Is that something you can handle, Don?
Maybe.
Don, Kilo Alpha 9 Uniform Sierra Golf, or sorry, Lee, Kilo Alpha 9 Uniform Sierra Golf. He's going to be using a generator for powering his station during the next field day. And he wanted to know if there's any need for power conditioning between the generator output and the power supply. He's heard pros and cons and...
You know what I would do is, if it's a 12-volt radio, I would, it's going to be an AC generator, so you're going to run it into a power supply. That should have all the filtering and everything that you need to smooth that out, I would think, inside the power supply. George, any thoughts on that?
You know, I wasn't really paying that good of attention because I was answering someone in the chat room.
Okay. Yeah, if you're using a generator for field day, what do you think? I mean, there's pros and cons to using power conditioning between the generator output and the power supply. Do you personally use power conditioning?
Actually, we do, but only for our computers and stuff like that. We have a UPS there, so if the generator dies or lopes or does something weird, the computers don't see it. But, you know, other than that, if it's a regular generator, it's going to have a sine wave coming out of it. You know, there shouldn't be a lot of garbage on it. It should pretty much be a fairly clean sine wave. Now, if you're using one of these newer inverter-style generators, I suspect there's a lot of filtering in them. But, no, I don't use anything extra myself.
Yeah, into YFE in the chat room, Andy, he says Honda generators run clean and also a UPS can help. I don't know that we've ever used a UPS in the years that I did field day. In fact, I think we had mains power available at the at our field day site, so we used mains power for the computers only, got it off the pole, and we used generators for the radios only, which was within the rules for field day.
Very good. Hey, Bob, now do you climb? What's the tallest you've ever climbed?
Yeah, I had a 110-foot run up and with the big Telerex 30. They were 35-foot long, had one for 6 meters and another 35-foot long for 2 meters. They were actually 20 feet above the tower, but the tower is 110 feet. I climbed that thing. Oh, that was back in the 60s, and I had a 60-foot that was in this house 10 years ago. So I haven't, now it's a U.S. tower that comes down to me, but I wouldn't be afraid to climb it. No big deal. And, you know, I'm an old guy, but it doesn't make any difference. I can still do my stuff.
Well, you're in good shape. Yeah, you can get up there. I know a really older ham that still climbs, and his wife operates the winch truck, but... yeah, it's nice to have tower climbers around to do a lot of this stuff as we get older, but they're harder to find. So just want to mention a couple things, too, housekeeping. Don't forget to take the survey, twit.tv/survey. Take that survey. It really helps the channel out. Also, we're on WTWW5085. And the nets for tonight on 75 meters, we got 3.908. On 40 meters, I think they were on 7.192, but I'm not hearing them. I hear someone up 3 kilohertz on 7195, but yeah, I'm not hearing them. Maybe I just don't have it, my beam pointed that way, or my receive antenna. Yeah, I'm on my receive. D-Star, 14 Charlie, DMR, we got TAC 311. That starts 5 minutes ago. So get in there and do drop in on Echolink. And I think that covers it. Hopefully I didn't miss anything.
Yeah. I was going to tell you, WTWW is off the air on 5085 right now. They had a massive failure of a big cooling fan. It's been off for a couple of weeks, but Ted tells me that they hope to get 5085 back on the air, hopefully by this Friday. So,
okay.
And again, if you have anything you want to send to WTWW that's ham radio related, you can always email it to them. Their email is email@wtww.us. And I'm not sure if they're on tonight on 12.105 going into Africa carrying Ham Nation audio tonight. But 5085, hopefully we'll be back on the air in time for the weekend. So that's the story on WTWW.
Great. That's it. That's all I've got.
You did a great job tonight, Valerie, and George, that was wonderful. Don, you're always, always in great shape, and I listen to Tamitha all the time, and how fortunate we are to have her giving us all this great information. It's really, really something. She's something else, and so we're really proud of what what's going on with this show. It just continues to grow. And I hope that we get to have Amanda back next week. And I think we'll all be here then. But until then, why, we'll look for you on the air. I'm going to be back into Pleasant Hope here in a couple of weeks, and I'll be able to do something. In the meantime, I've been sitting here building another. See, I do this too, guys. I'm building another board for the parametric receive system. This is a build board so that when the boys and the girls start assembling them, this will be the sample. But I'll have it going here in just a few minutes. So while all of you are doing your thing, I was watching and listening and soldering. See, I got it right here, and it's hot, so I got to watch it. But anyway, I'm just a nut for all these little things and building stuff and having fun. And hopefully some of you will join us on all the other things we do with the Pine Board and things like that. Thanks for joining us tonight. And thanks so much to you, Victor. We put you through the paces tonight. Don't forget the Orlando Ham Fest coming up. We'll be there along with a whole bunch of other people. And until then, we're going to see you right back here next week on this same channel, the good old Twit Network. And I really appreciate what Leo Laporte does. It's, you guys are something. So 7-3, everybody. We're going to see you back here next week. This is K9EID. Bye-bye for now.